Dr. Robert Leslie, who is a medical doctor, written a book called Angels in the ER. And Dr. Leslie is a physician who lives and actively practices medicine.
I certainly appreciate the opportunity to be with you today.
Well, tell me why you wrote this book.
Well, Roland, I've been practicing medicine, emergency medicine, for 25 years, and I've seen a lot and experienced a lot. And I've paid attention not only to the medical things that I've seen, but I've been struck by what I've seen from an emotional standpoint, from demonstrations of faith in the emergency department. And I've basically want to share those stories with people who don't have the opportunity to work in an emergency room. It's an amazing environment. It's a very stressful environment, but you really get to see people up close, and you really get to see people for what they really are. And it's an opportunity for me to write and to share these stories and experiences that I've had with others.
Do you find people are sometimes confused by the title of the book, Angels in the ER, because there's always those Discovery Channel programs about out-of-body experiences and that kind of silliness?
You're right. There is a little bit of confusion there. And when they ask me about that, I point out the last paragraph of my book is a quote from Thomas Aquinas, where he says that we are like children who stand in the need of masters to enlighten us and to direct us. And God has provided for this by appointing his angels to be our teachers and our guides. And I look back over my career in the ER and all my nights and days and weekends there, and there's no question in my mind that I have been blessed with angels that have taught me and guided me through some difficult times. And these angels are, to my mind, a few of them are doctors, a lot of them are nurses, but most of them are patients and their families and loved ones. And these are people that have demonstrated to me they live their faith. They live their faith, I think, through service and how they handle difficult and very trying circumstances. Now, I also, I think, have experienced the supernatural angels. I don't see wings flutter around the department and hear harp music in the background, but yet I believe in the real presence of supernatural beings or spirits that God does give us to help and to guide us. And I think, you know, I know that I've experienced a few of those cases. So in answer to your question, and I hope that answered it, it's not a book about wings and halos in the emergency department, but it's about flesh and blood angels, but yet some of the supernatural angels.
Book I recently read referred to that, I think, what you're talking about. The metaphor they used was being the gloves on God's hands when it comes to doing those kinds of works. And I think that's what you're talking about.
Right.
Yeah. Why in the world go into, you know, trauma-type work? Why not have one of the fun medical jobs like delivering babies and doing that kind of stuff?
Well, Roland, for me, it was fun. And that actually, you made a good point. I thought I wanted to be a pediatrician. And I actually did a year and a half of a pediatric residency before I realized this is not what I wanted to do. I liked the neonatal nursery where there was excitement, you know, you're dealing with emergencies. But when I decided I didn't want to do that, I decided I wanted to go into OBGYN and deliver babies. And I had about a six-month hiatus between residencies, and the director of the emergency room where I was in training said, we need an ER doc for 6 months. We'd be glad to have you. And so I said, fine. And it was an absolute natural fit. It was just perfect. I realized very quickly that this is what I wanted to do. I like the idea of being able to step in and make quick diagnoses and to help people, and then to make the decision, number one, whether they're sick, whether they're not, to do what it takes to stabilize them, to diagnose them, to get them the help they need, and then to move on to the next patient, because there's a never-ending line, as you can imagine, of people who need that kind of urgent and emergent care. But it was just a natural fit for me in the ER. And as I look back, I can't imagine doing anything different. Mm. I think that's what God planned for me to do. gave me the gloves to use them.
When you started doing the work in the emergency room, do you remember the first patient that you could not successfully help?
I do, and it was a very. I can remember the first lady I saw. It was a woman, a young lady with a urinary tract infection, a simple cystitis. And I was ecstatic that I could diagnose this woman and treat her. Now, that's a very simple problem. But that was, I will never forget that moment. But the other moment that I'll never forget, it was probably about a year after that. I was able to handle and have been able to handle pretty much everything that comes in the door, but I had one particular person. He was a 45, 46-year-old man that came in about 11 o'clock at night and with chest pain and shortness of breath. And it was, we tried, you know, x-rays, EKG. We did all the diagnostic things we could do to try to figure out what was going on with him. And we started some treatments, and he did not respond. He didn't respond to anything. And at first he was talking to me, and he was really a nice fella. And he was doing all he could to, you know, to give me historical help, but we tried everything with him, and his blood pressure kept falling, and just everything just went downhill, and we could not, you know, he went into an arrest, and we could not get him back, and he acted like a pulmonary embolus, so blood clot to his chest, to his lungs, but his autopsy showed absolutely nothing, and there was never any definitive cause of death, and that really shook me. That was the first time in my career that, you know, prior to that, I thought, you know, I can handle whatever comes through those doors, and that this really, you know, was a tap on my shoulder that, you know, Robert, you know, you don't know everything, and you're not going to be able to help everybody.
Does that sort of turn your entire medical education on its head?
Well, it does. You know, they don't teach you in medical school that you're infallible. But they don't teach you that you're not either. And so you do, and especially in the emergency room, I guess medicine in general, you have to have a certain self-confidence or ego, you know, and especially in the ER, you have to be willing to make a decision to stand by it, change it if you have to, but you have to, if you can't make a decision, you will absolutely perish in the emergency room, and so will your patients.
Hmm. Well, you've seen numbers of successes. You've seen some that have not turned out as well. And the reason I was asking about recalling the first one is I have to imagine it changes you, not just as a doctor and your approach and your philosophy of how you do your vocation, but also just as a person. And I'm kind of wondering if you can tell me what it's like. I don't know if you were a Christian at the time you became a doctor, or if you weren't, when you did become one, but how does someone face that without a strong belief in God?
Well, in fact, I was a Christian. I was blessed, privileged to grow up in a Christian household with very spiritual parents. And I did my wandering, I suppose, as all of us do, in questioning. And I've certainly, hopefully, matured in the process in the ensuing years. But I certainly was a Christian when I began practicing in the emergency room. And there were times that circumstances did challenge my faith. Never seriously, but without my faith, and without the knowledge or my world and life view, I really don't know how I would have dealt with the things that I've dealt with. And I really don't know how people deal with sudden injuries, sudden death, impending death, terrible diagnoses, how they deal with that without a spiritual faith, without a Christian faith, without the hope that of the future, and that this is, you know, that this is just a short travel on this earth. It's all we know right now, up close and personal, but it's just a small part of what I believe, you know, is going to be eternity.
Hmm. What have you seen in your practice as far as the distinction between the people you've treated who've who've had a faith, and then those who don't, who maybe think that this is all there is.
Well, one of the first chapters in my book is entitled "A Turn in the Road," and this was the story of a husband and wife who were coming down from Ohio to Myrtle Beach for a vacation, and we're sort of in between, and they were on the I-77 interstate. They came down, and not too far out of town, Frank Giles, the husband, had a moment, just about 10 or 15 seconds, where he just stared straight ahead and didn't talk. And his wife noticed this and got worried and convinced him to come to the hospital. And when he got there, he was fine. Neurologically, he was absolutely fine. He described this episode, or his wife did. He really didn't remember. And I said, "Katie, Frank, you guys are on your way to the beach. I'm not comfortable letting you go down there unless we know for sure that there's nothing bad going on with your heart or with your head, whether you've had a mild stroke or something like that." So we checked things out. We talked about it. And I sent him around for a CT scan of his head. And about 30 minutes later, the radiologist called me over and said, "Robert, tell me about this guy." And I told him, and he said, "Well, look at this CT scan." And he had a huge brain tumor in a very difficult place. It was going to look like it was going to be impossible to be operated on, and it was a very aggressive-looking tumor. Looking at it, the radiologist, you know, he and I both agreed this was not a... It was basically a death sentence looking at this tumor. And it was amazing that he had not had any symptoms prior to that day. So I went back and told them, and these are complete strangers, and that's the hard part of the job. But one of the hard parts is to sit down and say, "Here's what we've got, here's what it means, and here's what I recommend." And I said, "We can send you to the beach, and I know some people down there, we can send you back home. I don't know when you're going to have your next episode." And they said, "Well, let us talk about it." And I walked out of the room, and it's worse than a bombshell to have to tell these people basically that you're going to be dead in 6 months. And when I came back about 20 minutes later, they were sitting on the stretcher together, arms around each other, and they were smiling. And they said, "You know, we've decided that we need to go back home and see our family and touch base with our physician and see where we go next." And I said, "Well, I'll get your films together, get copies and all that." And he said, "You know, doctor, I'm 65 years old, and that's not old, but I've lived a good life." And he said, "I'm a Christian. I don't know if you are or not, but I'm a Christian, and I know that God has his hand in this, and he has his hand on me." And they were absolutely at peace with each other. And with the circumstance, it was really, I just stood there and listened, and we talked a little bit. And then, you know, then they left, and I watched them drive away. And I don't know what happened to him, but looking at that CT scan, I'm sure he's not with us now. But that... they demonstrated to me, you know, what this thing called Christianity is all about. It's not just words, and it's not just attending church and singing hymns. It's believing and drawing on that strength, and it was real and tangible. And interestingly, Roland, the medical literature, they don't know what to do with this, but more and more there are decent studies to show that people of faith, and usually it's of the Christian faith, have better outcomes with things like heart attack, with surgery, with dealing with cancer, than people who don't express a religious or Christian faith. Now, then that doesn't mean they're going to be cured. That doesn't mean that Frank Giles' brain tumor is going to go away and be gone when he gets back to Ohio. But people deal better with problems like this, you know, people of faith.
Well, I have to imagine that part of that is just the stress. You don't face as much when you can put it on your Savior.
I think that is a huge part of it. And you know, stress does, you know, and anxiety just ends up destroying us. But I think you're right.
You know, in your time in 25 years, in the medical profession, you've seen a lot change. And when you write a book like this, you strike me as a man who probably is not reluctant to share your faith with someone. But as medicine has changed and as the legal practice applies to medicine, I guess some hospitals must get kind of skittish about doctors wanting to talk about faith and Christ and different things. What's changed in 25 years from the time you started and the way you would go and maybe talk to a family with someone who's injured or dying and the way you would do it today?
Well, I think a lot has changed. We have to be more PC now, which is certainly unfortunate, isn't it? It's never been my place, I think, or viewed my place to proselytize or to preach or to get on a soapbox in an emergency department. But I've always paid attention and looked for openings if I have the opportunity to do that or to share my faith or to let someone talk about their faith. And I guess it was about 15 years ago, I think it was a person was having a heart attack, and we were getting things squared away, and he looked up at me and said, "Will you pray for me?" And that's a very, I said, "Excuse me, what did you say?" And he said, "Would you pray for me?" And I said, "Sure." And that was, I'll never forget that moment. That was, but it took me by surprise. And, you don't expect that in the ER. But sometimes those moments come. And I have never shied away from stepping in and talking to people, about the circumstances, and especially with their loved ones, and to try to get a feel for where they are spiritually. And then, because it's a whole... If you're dealing with a spiritual individual or a family, you can offer and share in ways that you can't when people are present a stone wall. And it's more difficult now. The changes now are much more. You have to be much more careful. I had one woman who I was talking to her husband. He wanted to talk about his faith, and we were talking. He was, it was pretty ill. His daughter came in and said, pulled me out in the hall and said, "Don't you ever talk to him about Christianity again, because I will go straight to the hospital administrator. It gets him upset. It gets us upset." Well, it didn't get him upset. Hmm. It was getting them upset. So I have, I have to back off there. I mean, I'm not afraid of the hospital administrator, but that's a fight with her that I'm not going to win. So I backed off of that. But it's more difficult. It is more difficult.
Have you ever been put in a position where a family member has wanted to let, another family member just sort of go on, but you knew you could still, work and maybe resuscitate and, maybe even help the person recover somewhat?
There have been a few instances like that. Obviously, Roland, the majority are the other way around.
Right.
But occasionally there have been some instances where I thought that, it's one thing to try to preserve life and to get somebody on a ventilator, where you've got a machine breathing for them and they've got a heart rate, and to get them up to the ICU where they're no longer your concern. But that patient's never going to wake up, and you're just prolonging the inevitable. But there have been other times, and it's usually with a bad infection or a bad heart attack where the blood pressure's fallen, but the patient is still can be saved. Just a few instances where a son or a daughter, for whatever reason, it's usually a child, is almost never a spouse, has said, "We don't want Daddy to suffer." I understand that, but I've had to say, I am not willing. Your daddy may very well survive this. I'm not willing. I'm not God. I don't know if he will or not, if he can or not. But I think he has a chance of doing this. And then usually in that circumstance, the other siblings or the spouse will step in and say, "Wait a minute, we need to do everything we can." That's a pretty awkward time. Mm-hmm. The flip side of that is is not, it's hard also, but it's, you know, when it's obvious that, that the loved one can't be saved and will never be him or herself again. And I don't know that for sure. Again, I'm not God, but there are times if somebody has been in an arrest situation for, you know, an hour and we've been resuscitating things, doing what we can, and we get a heart rate back, but he's not, a person's not breathing. You know, I mean, I think you know where that's going to go in the next 24 hours or so. And yet people, and understandably, loved ones want to do everything they can, and that's a whole issue that I know you're familiar with, the signing your papers that give you directives that, to the caregivers when if you reach or you find yourself in that position. But
yeah, I'm just wondering if being a man of faith makes resolve to do the right thing easier for you, because I have to imagine some doctors who, and this is not to be critical, I'm just trying to do a comparison, who don't have that sort of a worldview, who don't have an ethic to them that comes out of a faith in Christ, that they're more apt to be just a little bit more mechanical, where they're just going to take it sort of kind of like Joe Friday from the old, police series, just the facts.
Just the facts. Yeah, you're right. Well, I like to think so. I like to think that that's the case. And every person, every patient, every family is different. And I think if you become mechanical with it, and again, it's just the facts. Here's what we've got. Here's what we're going to do. Get out of my way. I've never practiced that way. By my best lights, I present the circumstances and the facts to the family members, and together come up with a plan and come up with a decision. And to my mind, the emergency department ends up being the pivotal place for that, because it's so easy, and I see it happen so much in the ER, that the ER doctor jumps in and does everything he can to to get the heart going, and when the brain is gone. And that's his job. Let's get him upstairs to the ICU, and without thinking, what is that going to do to the family, to the wife? I mean, she's going to be up there for the next day or two, and there's no hope here of this person recovering. So it's always been my practice, Roland, to involve the family. We do everything we can to help people, to save people. But then when we have some hard circumstances to deal with, is to sit down with the family members and help them make the best decision.
Yeah. Well, especially being an emergency room physician, it must be very humbling. It must also be a very difficult type of vocation. With about a minute and a half, can you tell me how your faith sustains you? How does it get you through a day when you have to treat maybe a two-year-old or another child that doesn't make it?
Well, that's dealing with children is the hardest thing for me, the hardest thing I think for any person who works in the emergency department. And as I've told my kids, I don't leave my faith at home. I don't leave it in the car when I get to the emergency department, but I take it with me. And my son, my older son, he's 28 years old. He finished reading this book a couple weeks ago, and he said, "Daddy," and again, he's 29 years old, and he said, "I never knew this is what you did. I never knew that this is how you spent your time. You know, you came home, you played with us, told us stories, put us to bed. You know, we'd go camping, do this. I never knew this is what you did." I don't know if that's good or bad, but it's not that I was able to walk out of the emergency department and leave things behind, but I did do that to some extent because I knew that I had done what I needed to do. And at the bottom of it, I guess, Roland, is that I know that God is in control and that I am just the gloves on his hands doing the best I can do in the emergency department. And I approached every patient, every circumstance. I want to do the best I can by this person and by this family. And yes, by the things we saw, without my faith, without my life view, I would not have been able to survive that.
Dr. Robert D. Leslie, thank you so much for being with us today on AM 850 KFUO. Where is this book available?
Well, it's available online, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Harvest House. Robert Leslie is my website, robertleslie.com.
Thanks so much. We appreciate you being with us. We're going to have to run.
Thank you.